It is Thursday on Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day and hope everyone's doing well out there. Really good show coming up today. Randy Johnson from the Star Tribune joins me here in just a few minutes to talk Frozen 4 that begins today at XL Energy Center. No Minnesota teams for the first time in I think almost a decade, Randy was talking about. We'll get to that storyline in a little bit, but it's also just a great tournament, right? Denver, Michigan, Boston University, Boston College, four of the premier programs in college hockey. So even though there's no Minnesota teams, even though the Gophers didn't get in, Randy and I got plenty to talk about with that tournament starting today. And also plenty of roster movement already for the Gophers this offseason. Some big names coming in, a few players leaving in the transfer portal. Randy and I will break that down as well. A potential Gophers football news of note at the end of the show as well. First, though, what did I miss? Two big games on Wednesday. Got to get to both of those here in the opening segment. Starting with the Timberwolves losing 116-107 to Denver. Wasn't even quite that close. They pulled their starters with a little less than 3 minutes left. Both teams playing on back-to-backs. This would have been everyone knew what was at stake, though, right? This was essentially the battle for the number one seed in the West. Both teams went in with identical records, 55-24. Whoever won was going to be in the driver's seat to take the number one seed in the West. Now, what does that get you this year? It gets you home court advantage, obviously, throughout the Western Conference playoffs. Not the finals if you get there because Boston has a better record in the East. But it gets you that. It gets you, the bragging rights, of course, of being atop the conference. Maybe gets you a slightly better playoff seeding, things like that. But it's not a huge difference in terms of that. This was less about can they get the number one seed as the Wolves, and more about how would they respond to a test this late in the year against a team that's a contender, just like they are. And they were okay for about 2.5 quarters, and then things started to kind of fall apart. Offense was stagnant towards the end in particular. Anthony Edwards didn't have a whole lot of places to go. Naz Reid didn't have a great game. Just talking about how they looked, we're not going to draw major conclusions, not this massive concern, but some of the things that have been a problem this year, the late game offensive execution, things like that, certainly crept up in this game. Head coach Chris Finch was certainly not a fan of how they looked on offense. Here's what he said after the game.
I didn't think offensively we were very good all night. Even in the first half, I thought everything was a little slow, a little sluggish. We couldn't string together enough good offenses, really, when we had opportunities to do so. And then in the second half, I thought our was a little bit better, and our key shot making dried up, and we just needed to make a few shots. But free throws really hurt us. That would have given us a little bit of a margin for error. But what I thought really hurt us was the 11 offensive rebounds that they had, and they all came at the most, damaging time. We'd gotten big stops, we'd played through the shot clock, we'd executed what we were trying to do, and they were getting second chance opportunities.
So to me, this game taught me a few different things. One, this was the type of game where the Wolves really, really missed Karl-Anthony Towns from a number of standpoints. One, from the standpoint of late game offense, right? When the flow disappears, when it's hard, when a team is, when a really good team is, buckling down defensively against you and you need to be able to make some one-on-one plays, Towns gives you that extra option, gives you that all-star caliber offensive option that can make a one-on-one play, that can space the floor a little bit better than they can sometimes with the other lineups they have out there. So having Towns on the road to recovery, sounds like he'll be back soon. Sounds like they want to get him back even before the end of the regular season. Even though there's just two games now left in the regular season, they'd love to get him back. That would be huge, because in a matchup against Denver, particularly going against someone like Nikola Jokic, who did everything he wanted to do on Wednesday night, had 41 points, showed why he is the best player in the NBA, why he is MVP, why he helped Denver win the championship a year ago. He was the best player on the floor, and he is going to be the best player on the floor most nights in any matchup. But when you are missing one of your best bigs, when you are missing one of the best bigs still in the NBA, You notice it more when you are going against the best big, the best player in the NBA. So Towns getting back into the swing of things. Now, I feel like they can win a playoff series without Towns at, you know, full strength, while they kind of work him back into the mix, even though any potential playoff series will be a challenge, and I'll get to that in a minute. But if you get to Denver eventually, which looks like it would not be until the conference finals, right? Denver looks like it would be on pace now to be the one seed. Wolves and Oklahoma City tied now at 55-25. Wolves hold the tiebreaker, so if they finish tied in the standings, the Wolves will be the number two seed. Now, the Wolves still have a game against Phoenix at the end of the season. That could determine a lot of where they wind up. The Wolves also, you know, have a challenging game, you know, relatively challenging game. Their next one up against the Hawks, that's tomorrow night. So, you know, Atlanta's still a decent team. The Wolves could lose to them as well. But if the Wolves finish tied with Oklahoma City, they'll be the two seed. So, you know, you got that all to consider. They wouldn't play the Nuggets until the Western Conference Finals, getting way ahead of ourselves. But just in terms of matchups, Towns would have time to kind of shake off the rust, get himself back into the mix, feel like you're getting a more full-strength version of Karl-Anthony Towns by the time you did get there. Now, matchups are a big deal. We're talking about, you know, lots of stuff here with matchups, lots of stuff with who's going to be where. Still way too early to tell, even though it's late in the season. Those teams, the Pelicans, Suns, Kings, Lakers, and Warriors, still bunched up 6 through 10. Still couldn't tell you who the Wolves would play. Could be any number of teams, especially because the play-in throws that wrinkle into things. The Pelicans still have to play the Kings, Lakers, and Warriors at the end of the season. The Suns still have to play the Kings and the Wolves. So there's lots of games that will be impactful in terms of the standings. I don't know if you can pick your preference, who you'd want to see. I mean, I think the Kings are kind of the dream matchup just because they've had some injuries, because they maybe are a little bit more vulnerable, but they've fallen all the way now to the 8th seed, and they could fall even farther depending on how they finish the rest of the year. But say the Kings finish 8th, and say the Kings won their play-in game, the 7-8 play-in game, and got that, got that win, got themselves into that spot. That would be the Wolves' potential chance to play them if they finish as the 2-7 game. But, you know, lots of stuff to go with matchups here. I think more importantly is the offense didn't look great. Need to get Karl-Anthony Towns back and just kind of not feeling great about your performance against the Nuggets. I know they've been good against the Nuggets. I think that the Wolves, like Chris Hine has said, like Chris Hine has written, feel good about the matchup in general with the Nuggets if and when they get to them in the playoffs or even in the regular season. But they did fall flat in this game. So what does that mean for crunch time, regular season, rest of the season, things like that? That's what we'll be watching for. The final point on this, minor point, the loss on Wednesday does mean the Wolves cannot tie their franchise best record. They were 58-24 in 2003-04. That was their best season in franchise history. Best they can finish now is 57-25. Already will be the second best regular season in history. Have a chance to eclipse that in terms of how far they go in the playoffs if they can advance at least to the Western Conference Finals and then beyond that, because that's how far that 2003-04 team went, the only Wolves team to ever advance past the first round. But that piece of it is already, we already know that about the Wolves now. They can't finish with the best record or tied for the best record in franchise history. They seem to be on pace for that for a while now. Doesn't matter all that much. What really matters the most is how are they playing at the end of the year. I still feel like they're playing pretty well. I still think there's things they need to smooth out. And again, we're getting really close to finding out how they fare in the postseason. The Twins, meanwhile, nowhere near the postseason, nowhere near looking like a playoff team in a lot of their first 9 games this year, 3-6 going into the series finale against the Dodgers on Wednesday, an afternoon game. If a team needed a win this early in the season for a confidence boost, yes, even a team that's coming off a playoff appearance, coming off a division title, coming off of winning a playoff series for the first time in so long, winning a playoff game for the first time in so long in 18 tries. If a team like that needed a confidence boost, needed a win, it was the Twins on Wednesday, and they got it. A pretty crisply played game. Not hard to see who the stars were in this game. Carlos Correa threw out Shohei Ohtani with an excellent relay to preserve the 3-2 lead in the 7th inning. Chip Scoggins wrote all about that. You can read that, Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. The hitting star, though, is Edward Julian. Hit a hit two home runs, has had some better swings lately, had been a little too passive at the plate at the start of the year, taking a lot of called third strikes, but he gets himself on track with two home runs, gives the Twins, you know, the offense they need in that 3-2 win. They patch it together with a lot of good bullpen outings. So just an important win, right? Like, again, no game's a must win when you're 10 games into the season, but the Twins, like Jim Suhan and I talked about yesterday, were not passing the eye test in any stretch of the imagination so far this season. In this game, they did, and it's especially important to get Julian going because their offense feels a lot better when he is rolling. Here was manager Rocco Baldelli after the game talking about Julian's contributions and what he looked like in that win.
Those were great swings. When he's going good, he really is seeing the ball to that depth and hitting the ball hard to the left side of the field. And seeing that is really a wonderful sign for us. And he's been focusing on these left-handers and the guys that he's probably been thinking about all spring are those left-handers. So being able to go out there after the good swing last night that was a line out to center and now hitting, you know, that ball today, that's good to see. And, you know, I love it. Like, I would love to see him go out there and face some more left-handers, and he's proven himself in the games.
If there's a concern, they still only had three runs in this game, right? 3-2. Three runs is not going to win you most games. It's going to win you some games. It's not going to win you most games. They need to get the offense figured out to a larger degree, but some encouraging signs, a win to kind of stop this bleeding. They were 0-4 on the homestand coming in. They couldn't afford another loss just in terms of how they were feeling. So the win felt important from that standpoint, and we'll see what they can sustain now that they go back on the road. Let's talk college hockey right now with the Star Tribune's Randy Johnson. Frozen Four starts off Thursday at XL Energy Center, Randy. A little bit of a different feel, obviously, than if the Gophers were in it or another Minnesota team was in it, but still quite the four-team selection that we got here. Some great programs, Michigan, Denver, the Boston schools. Like, it feels like it will be a really good Frozen Four. What's the kind of mood so far as you kind of take it all in?
Well, just got here this got here at 10:30 this morning, so haven't really talked to anybody yet. But it should be. You look at the field and just the teams. You got a combined 28 national championships among the four teams, and then just amazing amount of talent on the ice with 7 first round draft picks and a couple more guys that are draft eligible this year that'll go in the first round. So you got a lot of star power. I mean, if you want to watch some good hockey, come to the X. There's not a Minnesota team here for the first time since I believe it is 2016 that there hasn't been a Minnesota team in the Frozen Four. And a lot of those years were multiple, especially back in 21 where we had Minnesota Duluth, Minnesota State Mankato, and St. Cloud State in Pittsburgh.
Denver, one of the four teams here, you can make a case that they have been, maybe the one of, if not the most consistently excellent programs in so long. I'm just kind of curious from your standpoint, like, well, how is Denver kind of put itself in that position? They've been a good program for a long time. Growing up following the WCHA, that was always usually a good team. How have they become kind of this college hockey powerhouse?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with, they prioritize college hockey at that school. So, if they decided that they wanted to be good in that school, they recruit very well throughout the country and up into Canada. Basically, they've done it with different coaches. Back in the early 2000s, it was George Gwozdecki who hung back-to-back banners after 2 years after Don Lucia hung back-to-back banners for the Gophers. Then their next national title came in 2017, and that was Jim Montgomery, now the coach of the Boston Bruins. Now they have David Carl, who won the banner back in 2022 when the Pioneers beat Minnesota State Mankato in Boston in the championship game. So they've kept it going. They and Michigan are tied for the most national titles all time with 9 each.
As you think about the field, obviously all four teams capable of winning it. They have the talent. Kind of build the case for each one. If they're going to win it, what's going to get it done? Maybe kind of go down the line.
Denver is a very high scoring team, but they've got it done by winning close games in the NCAA so far. They were taken to a double overtime in the Springfield Regional by UMass and won a 1-goal game, then won another 1-goal game to advance. They're from obviously a very good conference in the NCHC, won the NCHC tournament They have a lot of scoring depth, so that's something like that. That would be what would carry them, I believe, scoring depth and good goaltending. Boston U, you got star power there. You have Macklin Celebrini, who's the consensus number one overall pick in this upcoming NHL draft. And at 17, he's the youngest player in the tournament.
Wow.
Yeah, he's tied for second nationally in scoring. The Gophers saw how dangerous he could be in the Sioux Falls regional final, where he basically just flipped the momentum in that game in the second period with two very important and very hardworking and showed off his skill assists to put the Terriers up 3-2 in that game. So that's the first semifinal on Thursday. Then the second one, you have Michigan against Boston College. Michigan has always been loaded with talent, and this is no exception this year. Gavin Brindley, the Big Ten Player of the Year. Rutger McGroarty, a very good tournament player. You look, and they've been on a roll. March 1st, they have a series at Mariucci against the Gophers. The Gophers beat them 6-2 in the first game, and it dropped Michigan to number 16 in the pairwise. They were not going to be in the tournament. And they win the next night 6-5 in an overtime, and they've been in 6-1 since. So they're playing their best hockey at the best time of year. Then you go to Boston College, the number one overall seed, number one team in the country. Basically, on a 14-game winning streak, they went over 30 games this year, lost five with one tie. They have four first-round draft picks in their lineup, so they're loaded. So that's it'll be interesting to see if Michigan can upset them. It's just a lot of really good talent in this tournament.
If this was basketball, obviously it's not basketball, but like a team that comes in as the number one overall seed, consensus number one team, you might think that was a pretty clear-cut favorite, even with other good teams. And hockey is different. Like, you get a hot goalie, we know all this stuff. Like, the margins are different in hockey than they are in a sport where there's more points scored over a longer period of time. That said, do you feel like Boston College is a prohibitive favorite, or do you see it shaking out differently? Like, do you just feel like it's kind of up for grabs, even if there is, one team that comes in as the number one overall?
Yeah, you're kind of asking me to speak a foreign language when you talk basketball.
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding. I would say they're the favorite, but if you go plurality versus majority, So yeah. I would say, 40%, I don't know, something
along. That's fair. Yeah.
When you usually in hockey games, you play to three. And that doesn't always mean that the best team wins. Sometimes the best goalie wins. I remember, one of Doug Wood's favorite sayings was they shouldn't have named the sport hockey. They should have named it goalie.
Right.
So you know if you get somebody standing on their head.
Yep. No doubt about it. Well, it'll be fun to watch starting Thursday. The Gophers certainly wish they were there. They, came a game away from getting there before, like you said, losing to Boston U in the region final in Sioux Falls. That said, their off season has been busy already. Take me through kind of the ups and downs. Lost a couple guys to the portal, but picked up an awfully good one from Connecticut.
Yeah, the roster situation is, they're building it for next year. First big bit of good news they got was Jimmy Snuggerud deciding to come back for his junior year. That's
yep.
There, he's a very integral part of what they want to do. Great goal scorer. I'm sure this season he kind of had a tough second half of the year. I'm sure that didn't leave a good taste in his mouth, and he wants to come back from that. They've lost three guys in the portal: Garrett Benonimi, Charlie Strobel, and then just yesterday Carl Fish. Those guys were more supporting cast type of players. But the big news was getting Matthew Wood in the transfer portal from UConn. He's a 2023 first-round draft pick of the National Predators, number 15 overall. Big kid, 6'4", 200. He can score. He hasn't had what you would call highly prolific seasons at UConn, but you look at where they might slot him in, you could have a line of all first-round draft picks if you put him on there with Jimmy Snuggerud or Oliver Moore, or if you split them up, you balance things out a bit. It's Bob Motzko looking to, bring in talent, and know, they lost Logan Cooley last year. They had a really good recruit in Cole Eisenman that flipped to BU. So this helps replace that.
Is this kind of the way of the world now in college hockey? I mean, there's been transfers before. I don't remember that many, not like, you know, big time year to year, kind of like following this along and the Gophers getting big transfers like this. You can correct me if I'm wrong, though. Or is this a newer kind of way for them to supplement their roster?
It's a newer thing with the portal era, where you can move and not have to sit out a year. Basically, they haven't relied upon it a whole lot yet. A couple years ago, they brought in Grant Cruikshank from Wisconsin, who was here for a year. Then he ended up going to St. Cloud State, kind of a depth center. Basically, they haven't hit the, Matthew Wood is the first one that you really signal that somebody, a higher end guy. You might see more of it with the Gophers going forward. I don't think they'll go, full into it like UND did this year. UND had basically their whole blue line was transfer players, and made them very competitive. So it's a way to augment the lineup to fill a need. But I think they'll always be still a developmental program trying to bring guys in and develop them, get them ready to. To go to the NHL, a lot of times they'll be them, which might force them to look for somebody for a stopgap for a year in the portal.
That said, I mean, you wrote about Dinkytown athletes and college hockey and how this is, maybe the name, image, likeness isn't transforming or like taking over college hockey like it has college football, college basketball to a certain degree. I mean, those are still developmental in some ways, but you're seeing big money, going to these players who are the top players to either sign initially or transfer. How do you feel like that's going to factor into college hockey, and how is it maybe already influencing the decisions of guys like Snuggerud and Wood to come here?
Yeah, I think it's something that you're gonna see more of. I think it was kind of a deal where people were dipping their toes in and saying, okay, how's this going to work? What's the rules going to be? And still, we don't know for sure what might shake out in the future in this. It seems like with NIL, it changes every day. But with college hockey, it's you'll see some teams become players in it. You look at North Dakota. Now they have a collective up there called the 1883 Collective. And you being from Grand Forks,
yes,
that the priority there will be hockey. It won't be necessarily be basketball and football, even though they are Division I teams in that sport. Most sports.
Right.
But hockey's king up there, so that's going to be something that teams like the Gophers and Michigan and Wisconsin, Big Ten teams across the country are going to have to compete with. You look at if you have say you have a place with a lot of NHL alumni, they might band together and do some type of NIL thing to try to help get some players in. It's one area where it could help too is that with college hockey. You have 18 full ride scholarships, a total of. You can split them up any way you want to as a coach, but you don't get to cover all of your roster, which is around 25 players
right,
with a full ride. So maybe an NIL deal steps in and fills in the gap for somebody who might be getting a half ride, that type of thing.
Did it catch your attention, particularly when Snuggerud's return was correspondingly announced with the Dinkytown athletes tweet that we've seen from some of the football players and things like that?
Oh yeah, I mean, I caught it right away. I mean, that's the way of the world now. I know it drives some fans nuts, and it's like, why are they announcing they're coming back to Dinkytown? It's like, well, it's the way to get Dinkytown's name out there. It's Dinkytown is trying to get as many people to sign up with them as they can to help fund the U athletes.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
A couple more things for you, Randy. With football and basketball, it's seemed like, portal gives, the portal takes away, but it's hard for the Gophers to compete probably with some of the bigger name, bigger, deeper pocket collectives that are out there already. In hockey, is that a different equation? Could they potentially position themselves to be kind of a dominant player in this game, since the money might not be as big and because the program is a relative giant in that space?
Most definitely. If they end up getting a lot of people who are decide to donate to Dankeytown athletes because they're hockey fans. And, you know, when people join, they can determine where they want their money to go, which if they can pick a sport, that type of thing. So they're a blue blood right now. And I'm guessing the blue blood stay the same. If they get into the NIL game, if they jump in and jump in hard.
I'm guessing the Gophers fans don't complain as much when they get players in the portal as much as they do when they lose players in the portal.
Yes. Yeah. If you're bringing in some talent and not losing it, I do think it'll help teams like the Gophers too that do lose guys, you know, after a couple years to the NHL.
Right. Okay. Any final thoughts on the Frozen Four before I let you go? I want to make sure we don't stray too much from that. It feels like it got a lot of good teams here. I hope people are energized by bringing a lot of good fan bases. I'm sure it'll be hopping over in St. Paul.
Yeah, you know, the Frozen Four is always, you know, it's a convention for college hockey fans. Yeah, I understand that not everybody is that. I don't understand why they're not.
Right.
But no, it'll be a good scene here. Yeah, you would have preferred, say the Gophers or a Minnesota team or a North Dakota or somebody like that here for more of a regional flavor, but you know, it's still great hockey.
Absolutely. Well, Randy Johnson, appreciate it. As always, go cover that tournament. We'll follow it on StarTribune.com and in the print edition, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Mike. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Really good stuff from Randy. Follow his coverage all week, all weekend at StarTribune.com and in your print edition, like we said. It's just going to be a fun tournament. I wish there was a Minnesota team just for the sake of, you know, just for the sake of fun, just for the sake of a little bit more of a local angle and obviously for Gophers fans, but it will be a great tournament nonetheless, and great coverage coming up from Randy. Let us finish with the cooler. Randy and I spent a decent amount of time talking about the college hockey transfer portal just now and what kind of the impact of that will be going forward. College football transfer portal. Randy and I didn't talk about this because this happened after he and I talked, but you know, football is his primary beat at the Star Tribune. Marcus Fuller, who helps out with football, wrote a story on Wednesday. Jackson Howard, the former Robbinsdale Cooper star who went to LSU, one of the best Minnesota recruits in a long time. He is entering the transfer portal. Interesting. Defensive end. Played 5 games last year. He was in spring practice with LSU. He is in the portal now, according to multiple reports. 6'4", 240 pounds, 4-star recruit, number one player in the state of Minnesota 2023 class. He visited the Gophers originally back before he made his decision. This will be interesting. Is this someone the Gophers could add in the portal? Could he be an impact player? The Gophers have lost plenty of guys in the portal. We've talked a lot about, you know, the portal giving, the portal taking away. Randy and I just kind of joke right now that Gophers fans certainly don't have as much of a problem with the portal when they're getting players as opposed to losing players. So we will see. That will be an interesting one to watch. Is that somebody the Gophers could land? Would you start to feel differently about the transfer portal if they could get that caliber of player in here right now? That will do it for me today. John Marthaler will join me on Friday's show to talk Minnesota United soccer. Emmanuel Reynoso, MIA again. We will get into that on the show, as well as the strong start overall to the new look Loons. Jim Suhan will also check in with me from the Masters on tomorrow's show. That round expected to get underway today, although a little bit of a delay Thursday because of weather. We'll see how much they get in today, but Jim will check in for a segment tomorrow as well. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Back at it again tomorrow.